Our reading this morning was given to me by one of our board members, Abby Marschke, after our board meeting 2 weeks ago, when we discussed with each other how we show up for one another and our faith. This was a story, of course, on a recent NPR hour. It is by Deirdre Sullivan.
I believe in always going to the funeral. My father taught me that. The first time he said it directly to me, I was 16 and trying to get out of going to calling hours for Miss Emerson, my old fifth grade math teacher. I did not want to go. My father was unequivocal. Dee, he said, you're going. Always go to the funeral. Do it for the family. So my dad waited outside while I went in. It was worse than I thought it would be. I was the only kid there. When the condolence line deposited me in front of Miss Emerson's shell-shocked parents, I stammered out, sorry about all this, and stalked away. But for that deep, weird expression of sympathy delivered 20 years ago, Miss Emerson's mother still remembers my name and always says hello with tearing eyes. That was the first time I went unchaperoned, but my parents had been taking us kids to funerals and calling hours as a matter of course for years. By the time I was 16, I had been to 5 or 6 funerals. I remember two things from the funeral circuit: bottomless dishes of free mints, and my father saying on the ride home, you can't come in without going out, kids. Always go to the funeral. Sounds simple. When someone dies, get in your car and go to calling hours of the funeral. That I can do. But I think a personal philosophy of going to funerals means more than that. Always go to the funeral means that I have to do the right thing when I really, really don't feel like it. I have to remind myself of it when I could make some small gesture, but I don't really have to, and I definitely don't want to. I'm talking about those things that represent only inconvenience to me, but the world to the other guy. You know, the painfully underattended birthday party, the hospital visit during happy hour, the shiva call for one of my ex's uncles. In my humdrum life, the daily battle hasn't been good versus evil. It's hardly so epic. Most days, my real battle is doing good versus doing nothing. In going to funerals, I've come to believe that while I wait to make a grand, heroic gesture, I should just stick to the small inconveniences that let me share in life's inevitable occasional calamity. On a cold April night 3 years ago, my father died, a quiet death from cancer. His funeral was on a Wednesday, middle of the work week. I had been numb for days when, for some reason, during the funeral, I turned and looked back at the folks in the church. The memory of it still takes my breath away. The most human, powerful, and humbling thing I've ever seen was a church at 3 o'clock on a Wednesday full of inconvenienced people who believe in going to the funeral.
Here is the world. Beautiful and terrible things will happen. Be not afraid, because this is what we are about. We hold hope for each other when hope is hard to find. We plant seeds that will one day grow. We are prophets of a future, not our own. We cannot do everything, but we can do something. So let us forget our perfect offering. There is a crack in everything. That is how the light gets in. So I come down out of the pulpit this morning because while there are some Sundays and some sermons that deserve and even benefit from the height and the distance of the pulpit that the Puritans wanted their preacher to have. Today, I want to talk with us. I just want to talk with us with no distance, not me up there and you down here, so we get a visible expression of my message this morning, which is how belief and pulpit pronouncements and practiced preaching and church mission statements and memorized covenants, all while good and important, matter less, actually, much less, than the religious practice of meeting each other eye to eye, face to face, hand to hand, shoulder to shoulder. The way we show up for each other with our bodies. And the reason for that is, you've heard me say this over and over again to you many times, because what we as a church and a faith are about is about belonging more than belief. We are more horizontal together than vertical, meaning we all believe on whatever may or may not be up there. We have more fidelity to each other, to community, than fidelity to any belief or lack of belief about God. We are, you've heard us say, about covenants and not creeds. We are about deeds, not creeds. We are about preaching practiced more than practiced preaching. We are more about getting more heaven into people than people into heaven, you've heard me say. And we all know this, don't we? You've heard me say this many times. Sometimes we can even be a little smug about it, actually. A little snobby. As if somehow ours is a better religion than others, a better church than others. So, to clarify, as far as I know, and I've been to seminary, there is no test. No one will be giving out a grade to you because of the church you go to. Whoever has the most chalices will not win. For those of you that have many, many. In fact, and this I do believe, the only real proven ground is life. And the only exam that gets given to us is the exam that we wake up to every morning, today even earlier. Our eyes blinking open to the light of the day as we try and try and succeed and fail and get nearly there to love each other, to grieve together, to stretch, to be patient, to be kind, to be generous, to be the, if you have a dog, to be the kind of person that your dog thinks you are. And if you have a cat, to not be the person the cat knows you to be. Or a goat, says Emma. Cats know. What I'm saying is, in other words, don't tell each other what you do or don't believe. Don't tell each other the answers you think you want to hear or they want to hear. What matters is how we show up. When, where, how. The test that we're given is not a test of pronouncements. It is a test of presence. That's the test. Which, believe me, is a tough pill to swallow for a preacher, who's one of my big jobs is to speak. But good thing you call me to do more than that. So I actually have no more notes, so I'm just going to tell you. As I mentioned today, as we see the candles, the light was hard to see this week in my role as your minister. And on top of it, on I think Monday morning, I have two kids, and both of whom gave this terrible cold to first me and then my wife. You can probably still hear it. I sound a little bit like Barry White in certain moments. So we lost our beloved Mike. I'm able to be with him and to put my hand on his forehead on Sunday afternoon. And then on, I think it was Wednesday, I get a call about Judy McGuire, who was one of the first people that I met here when I started here when I was a baby at 30 years old. Almost, 14 years ago. And she has three boys, Terry, Sean, and Patrick, who were young, who were in the youth group and a little bit younger than that. That she was in the hospital, which kind of surprised me. I didn't know about this. So Heather went down on Wednesday afternoon. Of course, you know, I had a fever, and I'm thinking, well, this is really, I shouldn't be going. Heather, can you go instead of me? Because I, you know, I'm just not well enough. But I'm starting to feel better come Thursday, and her sister calls me, Mary Lou, and says, you know, I don't know how much longer it's going to be. And, you know, the whole day, Thursday, you know, I'm like, feel better. You know how it is when you get a flu, you feel better, you get the ibuprofen kick, and then it plummets, right? And you're feeling bad. I remember Thursday, it was warm, but it was windy and rainy. So it's a full day here. For those of you who think that we only work an hour, we actually work on Thursdays too. Because we have staff meetings. Thursdays and Sundays. It's about 2:30, and Karen, my wife, is home sick, and the kids are home, and it's raining, and I'm not feeling well. And I was like, you know, yeah, I bet I can just, you know, Heather went yesterday, and maybe I can see Judy over the weekend or something. And I just started to feel just that little bit better. And I was about to leave, and of course I realized I forgot my wallet. So then I had to go all the way home to Holliston, get my wallet. So tempting, right? There's a couch, there's comfort, there's soup. I need to go see Judy. So I get in the car, and I drive through all the traffic. For those of you that have to commute into the city every day, my heart breaks for you. And all the way into Brigham and Women's. Judy, who is here in the pews, sitting, I think, right where Linda, you're sitting, about 6 weeks ago. And when Heather had gone the night before, she was unconscious, and she had her breathing tube in, and was not aware of her surroundings. But I go in there, it's about 4:30 at this point, through the rain, and I walk into the ICU, and first of all, I get to say, you know, I'm the minister, and they said, well, I thought her minister's already here, Gary Strickarts. So Gary is sitting right there as one of our, you know, longtime members, and also sometimes as a chaplain. You just want to raise your hand, Gary? Gary had just been in a couple hours ago, and Heather had been there the night before. How many ministers does she have? But I walk into the room, and those of you who've been into many of these rooms, as many of us have, there's a curtain, right, that closes over. And I spread the curtain, and there are three boys who I haven't seen in years. And there is Judy, who, again, 12 hours before was totally unconscious and not aware of her surroundings. Remember, the test of life is how you look as you open your eyes in the morning? She's looking at me. See, a breathing tube removed. And her son, Sean, who's had a tough life, this kid, just falls into my arms. I haven't seen him since I think he was your age, Connor. Falls into my arms, says, you have no idea how much it means that you're here. Judy whispers into my ear, thank you. And Patrick, the oldest son, you have no idea how much it matters that you've come here at the end of the day and all the traffic. Like, they're taking time to say thank you to me, you know? So the thing is that I'm, you know, I'm paid, apparently. I am. More than chicken and firewood, as my predecessors were. It is my job, in other words, to show up on your behalf, because when I walk into these rooms, I am not just Nathan. I am Unitarian Universalist Area Church at First Parish in Sherbourne, right? I come bearing that white steeple on the hill that Connor talked about. You are all on my back and my shoulders. You are my witnesses there with them. But it's a remind, but even though I know all of this, it's very humbling to me to think that here I am in the busyness of my work day, how easy it might be to not show up for a lot of good reasons, because you're sick, because your family needs you at home, but how would a seemingly simple thing of getting into the car on a rainy afternoon in rush hour can mean to a family and to a person. It's kind of humbling and kind of extraordinary, actually. You and me who wonder, who ask me as the minister, how do I live my faith? You ask me that all the time. How do I, what is Unitarian Universalism? You know, well, how do I explain it to my friends? You know what? It matters a lot less than you simply saying to someone, I am here. I see you, as I said last week. I'm showing up to you. We are a church of presence, even more than pronouncements. So my hunch is that each of you in this room today, having woken up extra early, is it really 9 o'clock? Oh, we gotta get to church if we're gonna go. You show up for each other this morning. You're not here to hear the minister. You're here to be present with each other. I'm here to be present with you. My hunch is that each of you in this room have a person or a cause that you are wondering how or if you should show up to it. I know this to be true. And I know this to be true because I am no different than you. Is there a family member that you have not called? Is there a cause that you have not signed your name down to? When you get your pledge cards in the mail tomorrow, how'd you like that segue? You show up. You show up. My wish for you is that you resist the siren calls of extra stuff and I'll do it later and do it now. That's my wish for you and my prayer for us. And I am right there with you. I am not far away, as our pulpit may lead us to believe. I am present with you. Amen.